Bali Maharaj is being ordered to go to the hellish worlds. It means the lowest planetary systems, not actually hell, exactly. There are different lower planetary systems, Atala, Sutala, Patala, going down to Patal, and below Patal is the place of Yamaraj, where there's very severe punishments. Although sometimes the lower planetary system, just like here, they're referred to as hellish, even though another name for them is Bila Swarga. Bila means a hole, and Swarga means the heavenly world. So, in the lower planetary systems, the seven lower planetary systems, there are many snakes, snake-like living beings in many of these planets. But they have facilities for a lot of material enjoyment. You see that Bali Maharaj, he went to Sutala, which, especially by the grace of the Lord, because he sent him there, was more opulent than the heavenly planet. So why is it considered hellish? It's more opulent. Well, one reason could be is that it's inhabited by demons. So however opulent the situation is, everyone becomes miserable, because naturally a demon is always chintana parimayam cha, and full of unlimited anxieties. And when they all live together, they simply give trouble to each other. Just like we see in America at the present time, there is comparatively, by the modern way of thinking, it's opulent. They have a lot of tin can motor cars and big buildings and what is considered opulent. But the people are not happy because they don't have a sense of Bhagavad Bhakti. They're not happy within themselves, and they give suffering to each other, because that's the nature of non-devotees. They give suffering to others. So without Krishna consciousness, this situation is hellish. Bhagavad Bhakti Hinasya Jati Shastra Tapaschapa Apranasya Iva Dehasya Mandanam Lokaranjanam. Without Bhagavad Bhakti, one may have various opulences. He may perform various sacrifices and austerities and apparently be a pious person, but it's no better than the decoration on a dead body. It's meaningless. Just like we see, even Ravana, he was expert in Vedic knowledge, son of a great rishi. What was Ravana's father's name? Hiranyakashipu. Who can say? Pulasti Rishi. So he was a rishi's son, Brahmin by caste. But he knew how to perform sacrifices. He performed very severe austerities. But he was devoid of the sense of Bhagavad Bhakti. Therefore, he was a demon. And even though there was a sense of material enjoyment among the demons, they're always cutting at each other. So the demigods, they're not pure devotees, but they're devotees, so they have some good qualities. Therefore it said, Yasyasti bhakti bhagavati kinchana sarvaigunas tatra samasate suraha. Those who perform a kinchana bhakti, that means without any personal desire, devotional service to Krishna, they become imbued with the qualities instead of the demigods. Actually, a pure devotee, his qualities are even better than the demigods. The pure devotee is the best of all the... Deva means, who is a devotee? Deva, we generally think there are so many devas, so many demigods. But the real, they're called deva because they're devotees. That's their real qualification. They're called deva because they have some sense of Bhagavad Bhakti. So even they in the heavenly planets, there's also so many anxieties because they're not pure devotees. As long as there's a desire for material enjoyment, there's always going to be some anxiety. But that is increased in the lower planetary systems, where they have some kind of society and cooperation. If they didn't cooperate, how could they join together to defeat Indra, to drive him out? But being the very nature of demons, they're always angry, disturbed, in so many ways. They have so many undesirable qualities. So Vamandev is telling Bali Maharaj, you have to go down to the hellish worlds for some time. Now, how is that? He is a devotee. He said, you have to go for the, you've performed sinful activities, you didn't fulfill your promise, you didn't give charity as required. Actually, no one could give charity like Bali Maharaj gave charity. That word is there, Bali. Bali means sacrifice, because he sacrificed everything. There are many famous givers of charity, such as
Karna.
The name comes immediately, Karna. Any others very famous? Shibi. Then? I'm thinking of another one. You ended up becoming a lizard. Nriga. There are many famous givers of charity. But Bali Maharaj gave the whole universe. But still he's being punished for not giving enough. He didn't fulfill his promise. So on both counts, he left a beggar unsatisfied, and his promise was false. So naturally you have to be punished. But a devotee, why should he be punished by the law? Generally it's considered if a devotee does something accidentally, then the Lord forgives that. And he's not punished like an ordinary karmi. Actually, he's not being punished like an ordinary karmi. This is the joking of Vaman. He's joking with Bali Maharaj to bring out his inconceivable good qualities, which are far greater than any karna or nriga, very great qualities. Bali Maharaj himself is quoting, of course he came a long time before Karna appeared. But himself is quoting that, Prabhupada used to quote this, Kirtir Yasya Sajivati, one who has got fame, he lives, he continues to live, he continues to be remembered. Similarly, there's the opposite, fame and infamy. Yasha and Apayash means fame and infamy. So if one is infamous, he also continues to be remembered, just like we're talking about Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, they're also remembered. They're famous. They're famous for the wrong reason. So if one can be remembered for the right reason, that is very good. Because a devotee, he doesn't try to advertise himself. Several devotees we see in Chaitanya Leela, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Lokanath Goswami. When Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami went to take blessings for writing Chaitanya Charitamrita, they gave on the condition, you don't write about me. So Gopal Bhatta's name just appears, but nothing about his activities. And Lokanath Goswami, who was the first, Lokanath and Gugarbha, they were the first Goswamis to be sent by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Vrindavan ahead of Rup Sanatan and the rest. So their names, you don't find them at all, even though they are great devotees, because they didn't want that. Yes, I'll give you the blessings, write the book, and make sure you put in plenty about me too. Mm-hmm. Just the opposite. Yes, blessings, but don't mention anything. So, Bali Maharaj, he was also thinking like that it's good if your name is remembered in such a way, in a good way. There are some devotees, they think not. No, why should it be remembered at all? But if one can set a good example, and that can be remembered, that's also good. Just like we read the stories of great acharyas in the past. So they live on by their fame. We still take inspiration on hearing. Bali Maharaj, we're hearing about his life. It's become true in his case that by his glorious activities, he's remembered even now. So we take example, we take inspiration from his example. All these stories in Bhagavatam, there's so many books, shastras, they're all instructive to us. Purana means it makes the Veda purna, that's one meaning of Purana. In other words, the Vedas, they give different directions. All the Vedas are meant for understanding Krishna. But it's not very clear in most of the Vedic literatures. Most of them, they only indirectly point to Krishna. So the Puranas, especially the Bhagavat Purana, very clearly points to Krishna. And also gives us the stories of great devotees, like Bali Maharaj, to give us inspiration how to serve Krishna. So previously, that on the not only on the bhakti platform, but on the moral platform, cultural platform. People used to be immersed here in India. People used to be immersed in hearing Ram Leela, Krishna Leela, Mahabharata. So to get some idea how to properly behave, what is the right thing to do, to take example. And also wrong example, you can take instruction from the wrong example. There are so many instructions from the wrong example, just like we have the wrong example of Hiranyakashipu. He conquered the universe by his austerities. He thought himself invincible. Ravana also thought himself invincible. But the stories of their ultimate downfall show that you can't circumvent the laws of God, neither by performing austerities, nor by surrounding yourself with a great army. If you live sinfully, you have to suffer. You cannot go on. In course of time, it will be stopped. Ravana thought he was invincible. No one can defeat me. Neither the Gandharvas or the demigods. He took benedictions, all the different classes of demigods. Some human beings he didn't take. He didn't fear humans. And even, he thought, even if there's any human being, he's in Lanka, 800 miles away from the coast of Harad. I don't know if that's the modern Sri Lanka, unless they moved closer or something. There are different theories, because he said there's a tunnel that goes from Lanka to Brazil. That's why there's so much gold they used to bring. Even there's an entrance way in Brazil. Anyway, we're getting off the story here. So, anyway, even if there are any human beings that there used to be a friend, who's going to come 800 miles over the sea? No one can come. So he wasn't concerned. Then Ram came. He didn't think someone was going to build a bridge by floating stones in the water. But he did. Even then, a couple of men with bows and arrows and a bunch of monkeys. Nothing to fear. He was defeated. Hiranyakashipu was defeated by Prahlad. Because of Prahlad, because he defied Hiranyakashipu, very passive resistance, peaceful non-cooperation before Mahatma Gandhi. So because of his great offenses to Prahlad, then Nrisingadev appeared and destroyed him. So we get information from Shastra. All the stories are given just to see. You see the story of Mriga Maharaj, how even though he performed so many pious activities, but because of some trace of impious activity, he had to suffer so much. So you get some information how these mundane pious activities, even from the point of view of material enjoyment, they're not very useful. See, Mriga Maharaj, after performing so many pious activities, still he had to suffer in a hellish existence. So we get all information from the Puranas. Now we may be saying then, why Bali Maharaj is being punished? Actually, he's not being punished. He's not being punished. An ordinary person who makes a false promise, he's punished. Actually, Bali Maharaj's promise, ultimately it wasn't false, because he gave the space for the three steps. Two steps, lower planetary systems, upper planetary systems, and the third step to cover his head. So he fulfilled them. But Vamandev is just playing some game. He's testing his tolerance. How far can we push this person? Another great example of pushing the tolerance is given in the story of, what's the famous story? I guess people don't read these things anymore. Harishchandra, how he was stripped of his kingdom, made to wander like a beggar, and so many things, but he remained tolerant. So the test, he was tested, he passed the test, he didn't protest. There's a test, and if you protest, you fail the test. But he remained fixed in his determination to serve Krishna. He remained fixed that whatever Krishna does to me, I'll accept it. And actually, Krishna, Vamandev, after testing him, gave him all material opulences, which ultimately he didn't care for. While he was in the mood of being the king of the demons, conquering over the hellish planets, he may have had some misunderstanding due to false prestige, Prabhupada might say. But then when Vamandev came and this test came to him, then he became awakened to full sense of Krishna consciousness, that which he'd heard about from Prahlad Maharaj. That became a reality to him. Sometimes people say that, why should you believe in God? No one ever saw such a God. You're talking about going to Vaikuntha, Goloka. But where is the proof? Did anyone ever go and come back and give you some photographs? There's no such thing. Why believe in such a thing? Better you're here, you make the best use of what's here now. Enjoy here now. So devotee, he has the faith in Krishna. Actually, it's not just blind faith. But devotee even here begins to experience Krishna. But his whole desire is to be with Krishna, serve Krishna. So in course of time, that will be fulfilled. And when that is fulfilled, then everything else, what any other trace of any material desire he may have had, that becomes forgotten. Prabhupada gave the example that when one goes back to the spiritual world, someone asks that, well, what is it like? Do you still remember your material existence? Prabhupada gave the example, just like someone had some bad dream, and they kind of vaguely remember it. It's not very important. It's all finished. It's over now. So like that, a devotee, he has the faith that certainly if I continue with Krishna consciousness, I will achieve the result. And Bali Maharaj achieved that in his very lifetime, that Krishna came to him and lived with him. There's one kind of liberation, which means to be in the association of the Lord. What is that called? Sayuja. Woo! Run away. We don't like to hear that word. What does Sayuja mean? To merge into the impersonal existence. We don't want that. You want that? We'll beat you if you want that. What's that called? In
Salokya.
Samipya. Samipya. In you have the word here in South India, they say, when you go into the temple, what do you call that? Sannidhi. So Samipya means to be, same thing, to be close to, and they, in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, their idea is to enter into the Sannidhya, the Lord, close to the Lord, and then what to do? To achieve the Kankarya, the service of the Lord. So here we see that Bali Maharaj, he was not going to Vaikuntha to have the association of the Lord, but the Lord was coming to him. And actually the Lord was serving him. Most unusual. The great result he got because of his fixed faith, and determination in Krishna. He never swerved, even though there was so much testing. That here, all right, here is Vishnu, now he's just doing the worst thing possible for me. But he had faith that even if Krishna apparently does the worst thing possible to me, then whatever he wants to do, I'll accept. He is my Lord unconditionally. So this is the example. We're not just hearing some stories, but we have to see in our life also how to apply this. Because all of us, we all have to suffer so many setbacks. Sometimes people think, I'll take to Krishna bhakti. They ask the question, why after taking to bhakti do I still have so many problems? As if you're thinking that I'll take to bhakti and immediately Krishna will come and sweep the house for me and wash the clothes and bring me food and so many things. Krishna says, yoga kshema vahami aham, I carry, so come. With that attitude, Krishna won't come. But if one is completely designed to serve Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates by completely desiring to serve his devotee. But if you think like that I want Krishna to serve me, then that's actually very offensive. The core mood of the devotee is how I can serve Krishna. So because Bali Maharaj was so much fixed in that, Bali Maharaj represents one of the 9 processes of devotional service. Which one? Atmanivedana. Complete self-surrender. in his case, his self, he had so much possessions, prestige, everything. So along with his atma, along with his self, his body, his mind, atma means self, body, mind, he had so much, so many possessions also. That's his prestige, everything he offered in the service of Krishna. He sacrificed everything for the service of Krishna. So we can remember, just like if we're having difficulties, which we will have, we can remember, what is the example of the Pandavas or Kahla? If we had to sacrifice something, we can think of Bali Maharaj. Our death, that we may not be so fortunate, we're unlikely to be so fortunate as to have the same difficulties that Kahlata. Because you see, such a great devotee, he was given more difficulties to test him. Or we may not be so fortunate that we have the opportunity to offer everything in the way that Bali. What will we offer? A leaf, a flower, fruit, water, what do we have? How much is someone earning? 3,000 rupees a month, how can you offer? 30,000 rupees a month, how much can you offer? But the example is there, that whatever we have, we may not be possessing the universe, but the same move, they're giving to Krishna. And even as a result, you may not be honored. Sometimes people perform devotional service also thinking, how I will be honored for that. In neophyte stage, we may offer some inducement that will give you some prize and clap you and praise you. A more advanced devotee doesn't want that. Even it may be that someone is sincerely trying to serve Krishna and there's some misunderstanding and blame. But remembering this example, he goes on with this. Since my service is for Krishna, I'm not doing this for my own praise. There's a nice story of, in the New Testament, I don't know which gospel, Jesus told that in the temple, or the synagogue, the Jewish temple, so some priests, just like Brahmins, they were standing at the front, reciting their prayers, making a big show, making some sacrifice. They were offering different things. And at the back of the temple, there was one poor widow, who was very poor. So she just came to the back and she had very little money, but practically all she had, she put in the anadan, dan peti, hundi, that's what she called, hundi. So she was praying to God that, you see these Brahmins, they're called Pharisees, they're so great, very pure, they're priests, they're doing all these sacrifices and so many things. They're so much greater than me. But dear God, I have very little to give you. Please accept whatever it is. So Jesus told that the Brahmins, they got the reward of what they were doing in this life. It means they got, people will praise them. That was their reward. The people thought, oh, these are very pious people. But the widow, she will get the reward in the next life. Because she wasn't doing it ostentatiously, not for a big show, but from her heart she was doing it. So Krishna is known as Bhavagrahi. He accepts not exactly what is offered, but he accepts the mood of offering. Now sometimes that's misunderstood, that all right, we'll just offer anything. But no, devotee likes, just like, why we're cooking so many different nice things to offer to Krishna. And they say, well, why so much? Krishna's already, he doesn't need us to feed him. It's true. He doesn't need our food. Even if he needs food, he has Mother Yashoda cooking for him, Radharani cooking. What are we going to give? But the food, that how nicely we prepare, how nicely we offer to Krishna, that is an expression of how much we want to please Krishna by our service. Krishna sees it. He becomes pleased that someone has taken so much trouble to cook nicely and offer to me, whereas if you just, okay, boom, 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 finish here, minimum. Then Krishna sees that also. Between formal worship and worship from the heart, Krishna sees. What is the difference? Generally these ritualistic ceremonies. It's done like with some sense of prestige, bombastic show. But Krishna, he's satisfied. If we offer anything, whatever it may be, with genuine feeling that Krishna wants. Even Prabhupada was saying for offering, how to devotees use, how to offer, what is the system, what mantras, what tantras, yantras, mudras, and all the different things we should do. Because if you want to learn in deity worship, there are so many complex things you can do. Prabhupada said, not much mantra required. We don't need many mantras. Simply if you say, my dear Krishna, I'm simply offering you this, you please accept. Krishna, if you actually say from the heart, Krishna will be very pleased. Whereas if you can say all the so many mantras and so many this and so mudras and so many different things. But if it's done formally or officially, Krishna is not very pleased. So the real thing Bali Maharaj he gave to Krishna was not all the universe, which anyway it already belongs to Bhamandev. But he gave his heart and soul to Krishna. And Bhamandev reciprocated by giving himself heart and soul to Bhagavan Maharaj. So that is the relationship between the devotees and the Lord. That's why why we're reading these stories, when we see all the devotees, how they're giving their hearts to the Lord. He gives himself to them. There's a verse in that regard. Who knows that verse? I am in the heart of my devotee, the devotee is in my heart. Madchita, well, that's one verse. Madchita madgata prana. Bodhiyantas parasparam. Tatyantas jamamnityam. Tushanti chara mantichara. What's the translation of that verse? Thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. So there's one other verse I'm thinking of from the 9th canto of Bhagavatam. Anyone know that? That's from Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter. 9th canto of Bhagavatam. Sadhavo hridayam mahyam, sadhunam hridayam taham. Madanyate na jananti naham tebhyo managapi. Krishna says, the devotees, they're in my heart. I'm also in their heart. They don't know anything but me, and I don't know anything but them. Who spoke this verse? Lord Vishnu. To? Durvasa Muni. On which occasion? Yeah, Amarish. He wanted to get free from the Durvasa Muni wanted to get free from the offense of insulting Maharaj Ambarish. So what is the method? What should you do? Go and bathe in the Ganga 20 times? And what can you do? And Krishna said, there's no way out of this because I'm God, but devotees are more to me than my very self. So there's nothing, you can bathe in the Ganga all you like, but you won't get, because I'm more dissatisfied when you dissatisfy my devotee. So you have to get forgiveness from him. Devotee, Krishna likes more than himself. He considers more important. Natata me priyatama atma yone na shankara nacha sankarshan unashri naivatma chayata bhavana. Krishna said to Uddhava that neither natata me priyatama, no one is more, how to say, more dear, natata me priyatama, that Brahma is dear to me because he's born from my own body. Lord Shiva, he's very dear to me. Balaram, he's very dear to me. Lakshmi, she's very dear to me. But Uddhav, you are more dear than all of them to me. And you're even more dear to me than my very self. This is the relation between the Lord and the devotee. So this is what's going on here. That Bali Maharaj and Bhamandev, they exchange some exchange of deep affection. And ordinary people, they can't see this. They'll see some story. But devotee, when he reads this, he becomes inspired with this. That how can we get some drop of that? And Bali Maharaj, he's so much an ocean of love of Krishna. So a devotee is thinking, how can I get in the same mood? How can I get even one tiny drop of the same nectar that Bali Maharaj is having? So how to do? We don't have any universes to offer. Not likely to either. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told us, chant Hare Krishna. Yaha hoite sarva siddhi hoibe shava. By this chanting, everyone can achieve all perfection. The same perfection Bali Maharaj achieved by offering everything, the same perfection Prahlad Maharaj achieved by tolerating so many insults and tortures from his father, the same perfection that the Pandavas achieved, we can achieve by chanting Hare Krishna. But chanting means in the mood of cultivating the same mood as these great devotees. So chanting and hearing, hear the Shastra, associate with devotees, pick up that mood. What is Krishna Bhakti? Ultimately, it's, we say, bhava, feeling. Feeling that is expressed by activity. But it's not just the activity, you see. What is the feeling? So, Hare Krishna. Anyone like to say anything? You have any temple devotees here? Hardly, huh?
They're shaving their heads.
No, shaving their heads. Someone died? He said, don't come to the temple either. I said, maybe someone died. They don't come to the temple and they're shaving their heads, so it must be someone died. I was going to say about Mangalati this morning, why I stopped him singing twice, because all the wrong tune, but there's no one to say to him. You also were going to stop him, right?
Yeah.
He started singing all the wrong tune.
And
in the correct tune also. I've written a book. It all needs editing. So many things Prabhupada told, which is so many things devotees don't know. Long essay on kirtan, maybe 20 pages. How Prabhupada said we should do kirtan. Vaishnava etiquette.
No, you were saying that Uddhava is not the other than Balada.
That's what Krishna says. I don't want to argue with him. In Dwarka, Uddhava was known as the topmost devotee. He was considered, he was considered the topmost devotee in Dwarka. Krishna sent him to Vrindavan to learn that you're the best here, but you want to see what they're like over there. So Uddhava, he was famous as the topmost devotee because he's also mad in love of Krishna, just like the Vrajabasis, who generally they do all kinds of strange things, like putting their clothes put down on the top part of their body, and because they're confused in love of Krishna. So Uddhava, he was also like that, because he used to go see the clouds and just talk to the clouds and all kinds of crazy things. So but when he went to Vrindavan, he thought, I'm supposed to be the topmost devotee in Dwarka, but here it's a different level altogether. So Uddhava decided he'd like to stay in Vrindavan as some grass. Because he said, if I stay as some grass, then maybe sometime the gopis will come and they'll walk that way and I'll get some dust from their feet on me. So you can't imagine.
Now you were talking about Nāga and all this. I mean, I just read yesterday Prabhupada's lecture, he says that when we do our devotional practice, and Prabhupada said, and then he is actually my representative. Okay, he's quickly following the devotional practice. Not that name, not that position and destination,
Yeah, of course.
But when we quickly follow our devotional practice, then our society will become more. bring more brothers to the society. This is like Baba said.
A strictly following, one can strictly follow even in the beginning stage. So it's not necessarily that if one's strictly following that, it's not necessarily concomitant that someone who's strictly following is in the bhava stage, has developed. Ado shraddha tata sadhu sangha tata bhajana kriya. So strictly following, that starts at the third stage. The first stage is have faith and to associate with devotees, then to follow strictly all the rules and regulations is the third stage. Then after that comes anartha nivritti. Ado shraddha tata sadhu sangha tata bhajana kriya. Anartanivriti, nishta, ruchi, asakti, then comes. But even bhava, I mean, that's a general term also. Bhava is a specific term which means the stage when one is practically a pure devotee. But also it's a general term which means feeling. So even in the beginning stages, if there's no feeling, then why will you follow Krishna bhakti? Even in the beginning there's something that has to be developed. Buddha bhava samanvita, Krishna says. Those who know, that they realize I am the greatest. Krishna, ham sarvasya matasarvam bhavati, iti natya bhajanti, buddha bhava samanvita. Realizing Krishna is the greatest, everything comes from him, he's the source of everything. Those who understand this by their intelligence, then with feeling they begin to worship Krishna. So feeling is always there. And if it's not there, there may be so many rules, regulations, this, that, and the other. But it's not pleasant. Rules and regulations are required, but if we take Krishna consciousness only as a set of rules and regulations, then it becomes frustrating. So both things are there. Rules and regulations should be strictly followed. But sadbhavana, you've heard this term. Proper feeling should be there.
But we are not able to follow the rules and regulations, but we don't have a proper culture.
Attitude. Yeah. So rules and regulations, but attitude is ultimately the most important. Mentions in the Nectar of Instruction, the purpose, he says that advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the follower. So one may strictly follow, but it may be niyama, there are two. Niyama agraha means not to accept the rules and regulations. And niyama agraha means to be very enthusiastic for the rules, but without understanding the inner spirit of the rules. Because all the rules are meant for developing love of Krishna. Smartavya satyatam Vishnu, vismartavya najantuchit, sarva vidhi nishedasya, iti eva kinkur. All the rules and regulations are meant to, they're subservient to the main rule, which is to always think of Krishna and never forget him. So if one is interested in rules only for rules' sake, but he doesn't have a spirit of service to Krishna, then following the rules, it's actually is one of the six things which causes destruction in devotional service. Shraddha bhakti vinashyati, one of the things which destroys. So everything has to be kept in balance. Can we give some practical tips on how to control the mind when? When it feels insulted, when we feel insulted, what should we do? Then we can remember why we have so many books, the same thing I'm saying, just in the class. We can remember the example. No, but it's the same basic thing, just like the cowherd boys, they went to beg from the brahmanas and the yagyic brahmanas, and they were simply rejected. So they felt insulted. Remember that Krishna, you told us to go and beg, and now these proud Brahmins send us away. So they're all upset. And Krishna told them, why are you getting upset? Here, I'll tell you what to do next. Go and see their wives. So we can remember, even from the intelligent point of view, we can understand, why should I be upset? In 10 years' time from now, will I still be upset because someone said something? If you are, then that's very, very bad. If you bear a grudge. But just remember, anyway, who am I? I'm very small. Very small being in the universe. If someone's insulting me, maybe it's good. Maybe I deserve to be insulted more. Maybe it's true. Someone's calling you, you rascal. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's difficult because our false egos are very strong. But that is the test. Actually, this kind of situation gives us more opportunity to make advancement. As long as everything's nice and we don't know. When the test comes, then we'll see. Then when now you've chanted, you've heard, you've spoke so much philosophy and so many things, now the test comes. Then how are you going to react? That story was up on the board about the dhobi and the Brahmin. So the Brahmin got upset. You all read that? I suppose everyone knows. So then he got upset. That means he didn't actually have any deep realization of all the things he was talking about. So that's the test. Now you should realize, in any situation, Krishna is testing. How will I react?
You know, even you tell them a good thing, you know, to help them and nice thing. Sometimes you can insult them by not telling them anything.
Yeah, even you say something to someone for their good instruction, they often become upset.
Yeah.
You
only tackle them from the
Well, in giving instruction, we also have to see who we're giving to and their ability to accept it. I don't usually try to say anything to someone unless I think they're ready to accept it. Otherwise, what's the use? You have to see. It's a great art also to instruct. There's also, you have to see, it's not just a matter of telling someone and then they follow. Sometimes I know people say to me, well, why don't you instruct your disciple? And as if it's just your disciple's doing this and that wrong, it's your fault, why don't you instruct him? But it's not such a simple thing that you just tell and then they immediately do everything perfectly. Then it would be very easy. You just tell everyone, okay, here are your beads, now chant Hare Krishna, don't ever do anything wrong, do everything right, and then, oh, okay, all right, Guru Maharaj. Don't have any more lust or greed or anger, okay. Not so easy. It's not so easy that just by instruction that someone will give up all their bad habits and tendencies which have been there for millions of lives. So instruction, giving instruction, that may be an ongoing thing. You may have to tell many times. You may have to find out the way to give an instruction. Or you may not give it if someone's not willing to listen at all. But generally that... If someone has the respect for you, then they're willing to listen, and then you can instruct. But if there's no respect, then what can you do? Therefore, this in Vedic culture is one of giving respect. Prabhupada writes about Yudhishthira Maharaj in the Krishna book that he knew how to respect the proper people. So generally that one should respect elders, those who are more knowledgeable, those who are more advanced in Krishna bhakti, authorities, just like one respects the king, or in a temple setup, one should respect the temple authorities. So this is all meant for us, so that those who have got the right instruction, those who are in authority are supposed to know what is right and what is not, and instruct others for their benefit. But that we see in traditional culture, it's not just of that juniors respect seniors, but it's seniors also very affectionate to juniors in this world. So that culture now, where is that culture? In India also, it's more or less broken down. So in our society also, there's the respect that used to be there is not the same as it used to be. Because of in many cases, the respect that was given was misused. People, when someone takes the position of guru and gets very heavy with his disciples, and then he also runs off. So actually people, they want to see that someone's not just in a position, but nowadays in our society, the position is that people may respect to some extent, but they want to see what is the personality also. That the days of demanding respect or just ultimate, that's not...